Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Joe, hello to you. I want to start by sharing a text from one of our listeners. After listening to Joe Lindsley talk about the war in Ukraine and what the people are going through over there, it made Thanksgiving even more meaningful for me in appreciation of how fortunate we are in this country and how fragile the freedoms we enjoy are as we pray for the Ukraine in their struggle and also for Joe. I think a lot of us feel that way, Joseph.
Wow, Bob, thanks so much to that listener and to you for that. We can feel that strength over here in Ukraine. You know, Thanksgiving Day in the USA marked 9 months since February 24th, since Russia's full-scale war on this country. And, you know, as we see, think about, you know, the American spirit of freedom. We look at the scenes now in China, people, you know, trying to have the right to live freely, to speak freely. The same thing we see in Iran. And it's the same story here of Ukraine's struggle. And so I think, you know, the more free people can stand together, the better chances we have of surviving all this. You know, on Thanksgiving, there was a Chicago native here in Lviv, Chef Rob Nui. He's a U.S. Special Forces veteran, native of Chicago. He's got an organization called UA Lifeline. They work with refugees. And he hosted a Thanksgiving dinner for Americans and Ukrainians and many of the other foreigners who are here to help. So we were able to enjoy the holiday a little bit. And in fact, in Lviv, we have not had even an alarm since I spoke to you last Wednesday. So it's sort of these strange days of quiet, waiting to see, you know, what Russia will get up to next. But you know, 9 months, it takes a toll. And especially these past weeks where we have significant difficulties throughout Ukraine getting heat and power as the winter sets in. A few days ago, I stopped in a cafe here in Lviv, and the bartender had a big coat on inside, and he was sick. He couldn't even talk because he has no heat or hot water at his house. And so you see the impact at these sort of micro levels. On the other hand, you see great defiance. And for example, my friend Yaroslav, he owns a jazz club in Odessa, and he wrote on Facebook over the weekend, the Russians have trained us out. The power is too small. Instead of fear, we have immunity, because with each of these attacks every week, it is very difficult, but Ukrainians are learning how to survive with limited electricity. And so he said the complete blackout of Odessa doesn't scare anyone anymore. Everyone walks around and continues working like nothing is happening.
We have such admiration for the resolve of the people there. I was listening to a U.S. military expert talking about the war and what the Ukraine strategy might be, and he said that's a very good question, because we're looking at a very long slog here unless we get much more help from the United States and other Western countries. What's the feeling over there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a need for more of the long-range weapons that have helped Ukraine stand its ground. I think it's important to remember, I think we forget this sometimes, even here, but I was speaking with some Americans over the weekend, you know, Ukraine doesn't attack Russian territory. You know, Moscow is not getting hit. Little villages, you know, simply 2 miles across the border in Russia from Ukraine are not under attack. They have energy and electricity. If they don't have electricity, it's their own Russian infrastructure problems. But so this is, you know, when in the history of warfare have we seen, despite Ukraine's battlefield successes, they've restrained themselves from attacking Russia. They're only seeking to defend their territory. And that's very unusual. But that also, you know, it's, you know, how can you stop Moscow without actually going, you know, for the Russians? And so these are big questions we're going to be facing these next months. Meanwhile, Ukrainians know they have, you know, to keep building the resilience, because Russia cannot win on the battlefield. They can resort to hitting the infrastructure. And even in the recently liberated territories in Kherson, where people have been celebrating, it's not easy there because the Russians continue to send missiles and artillery fire to those places. And for example, here in Lviv, where we have had a few days of calm, it can even be easy sometimes to, because people adapt so well, to forget what's going on. And so the power goes out, the restaurants immediately light the candles, the staff will play music on their phones. And yesterday I was showing the Canadian journalist around, and if you had just arrived here, you could say, oh, maybe everything seems okay. And then I was speaking with some friends, and one of them told me that a mutual friend of ours had lost his leg in the intense battles in Bakhmut. And so you're never far away from the horrible reality of the war. And in fact, that friend who lost his leg back in the summer, I mentioned him to you guys because he and his comrades were listening to our broadcast, Bob. They were in the trenches listening to WGN, and fortunately my friend survived, but you know, it's now he's got to live life without a leg, and these are just the continued atrocities of this war.
We see those folks on the news, we hear about it, and it's heartbreaking, but for you, it's personal, and I don't know how you deal with it every day. And weren't you telling us a story, or you wanted to tell us a story, I don't know if we got into it, about some friends of yours who survived a Russian rocket attack on their car, and it was the very same car that was part of that grasshopper story you told us. Can you fill us in on that, Joseph?
Yeah, I remember there was that nice moment, and I was talking to you in the summer. I was in the city of Nikopol driving to Zaporizhia. I missed my train, and my friend was driving us to Zaporizhia. And Nikopol is a city that, at that point, was getting shelled day and night. And my friend's family was in Germany, and so his only friend was this little grasshopper that had taken up residence in his car for several days. And he called the grasshopper Igor. And perhaps the grasshopper was also afraid of the horrible constant shelling, also the chemical weapons, the phosphorus bombs hitting Nikopol. So it was a nice moment there of peace. And then I remember it resonated with some of your listeners. And then a couple weeks ago, that friend sent me video of his apartment building and of his car parked outside, and a Russian rocket had been fired from their position at the nuclear plants across the river. And it, fortunately, no one died, but it destroyed much of the building and that blew up the car. And so that was you realize, there was that moment of sort of peace last summer on a road trip, and then to see that very car that I was in completely destroyed.
I hope you're writing about all of these incidents, large and small, Joseph.
I hope. I mean, once we get through to victory, this would be a good book. And but actually, these broadcasts is I think the best diary of what's happening. And it helps me to also, because I think without that, every day sometimes, Bob, can feel like a month or a year. And I was talking with friends about what it was like for us in February. I feel like I was a little kid back then. We've grown so much since then, but you being able to speak with you gives a good demarcation and helps me analyze how we are carrying on here toward victory.
Well, it sure makes us feel good that we can do a small part here to help. Well, Joseph, we'll talk again tomorrow. I hope it stays calm and peaceful there for a while anyway.
Thank you, Bob. Talk tomorrow.